It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
See you. All righty. Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. It's a wonderful day right here in Hawaii. Anyway, glad to have you back with me. And my guest today, I have Mr. Frank O'Brien, attorney. And Mr. O'Brien practices law here, in Hawaii. And very interesting area of law, and I play the Whitney Houston. As you know, sometimes you suspect that there's some theme, and you would be right in this case. We're talking about foster care of children, children being abused, children being neglected here in the state of Hawaii, and we have a number of topics we're going to talk about as it relates to this. But I'll first of all let Mr. O'Brien introduce himself, tell us a little bit about himself, and hopefully you tune in, and 524-1080 is the number if you have any questions. Or he is an attorney, and I don't suspect that he'll be practicing law over the air, but you can always call him if you have questions, or send an email to carol@carolcox.com, and we'll give you his contact information as well. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
And thank you for joining us. Where you hail from?
Well, I'm originally from Massachusetts, but I've lived here in Hawaii for about 40 years. Came here in the Army and then stayed after I got out.
Yeah, I noticed you have pretty good, Boston College Law School, and you were also quite Judge Advocate General's Corps.
It was an interesting time. I was in Korea. I taught at West Point. And then I was the first lawyer they ever had up at Tripler Hospital here in Hawaii.
Really?
Yeah. Just me and all those doctors. It was a very interesting experience.
So the first lawyer for
Tripler Hospital. They'd had lawyers at Fort Shafter or at other places, but I was the first lawyer that was specifically assigned in the hospital to advise the command and to work with the doctors.
Mm-hmm. Now, as it relates to abused children, foster care, what services do you provide? If there's a listener out there, I'm sure may have an interest or have an experience and may want to contact you, let's put them in a frame of mind. Is what can you do for them first, if that is, we're not advertising, but
I'm unusual in that I'm a private attorney that practices in cases involving abuse and neglect.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the attorneys that you'll find in those cases are attorneys that are paid for or provided by the state of Hawaii. In a child and abuse, a case under the Child Protective Act, you have the Department of Human Services that's represented by the Department of the Attorney General. Then you have the parents, usually, of the child, and a guardian ad litem.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I represent parents. Sometimes I represent foster parents. Sometimes I represent relatives. Most of these, other than parents, are people who are trying to adopt the children after parental rights are terminated.
Mm-hmm.
So that I bring a little bit different perspective, because I'm not a part of any organization or any particular group. I'm not mm-hmm. beholden to the state or anybody in there. I basically represent people who choose to hire me.
Mm-hmm. I was looking at some of the interesting statistics here. Nearly 3 million children annually are abused.
Right. And, you know, it's very hard to confront when you first come to it, because it's hard to realize when you talk about abuse, you think, well, maybe you spank a kid a little too hard or something like that. But when you talk about child abuse and neglect, you're talking about people who just beat the crap out of kids,
mm-hmm.
Who sexually abuse kids, who use drugs while they're pregnant, don't take kids to doctors, really do terrible, terrible things to children.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on cases now where I had one case where a child had had a fractured skull and had been shaken. I've worked on cases where I sued the state where a child was beaten so badly that he, at the age of 4, was put in a vegetative state and remains in that state today, 14 mm-hmm. years later.
Now, speaking of the state and suing, there's been a number of cases, Peter Boy,
Right.
In the recent one, the young lady that was starved, has there been any legal action against the state just in general to compel them to become more efficient, more effective, and more skilled at protecting?
That's an interesting question, because when I started and when I the first couple times I sued the state, my thought was is that if I sue them and I show them that they're doing these things that are bad, that perhaps they'll get better. One of the things that I learned to my great sadness was that they really don't care. The fact that you sue them, the first rule of state government is you never admit that you did anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so the people that I've sued prospered in the system. It isn't as though the department really instituted any major changes or did anything to try and be a better department. They have changed, and they have changed for the better over the years. But I think I learned that suing them doesn't make them better.
Mm-hmm. Because it's not their money, and there are no real consequences to the administrator who failed.
That's correct. And, you know, it was what got me into the business in the first place was the first case I took, which was a case on one of the neighbor islands where the two children, brother and a sister, were placed in a foster home. The foster home was foster parent was a woman, and before she was certified or licensed by the Department of Human Services, a Maui police officer went to the social worker and said, you really shouldn't certify this home. The woman that you're going to certify, information we have, says she's sleeping with her father and her brother is a child molester. But the department certified them anyway, and they put these two kids in the home. They were 11 and 8 at the time. The mm-hmm. girl was 11, the boy was 8. The father raped the girl, the brother raped the boy, and I ended up suing the Department of Human Services.
Mm-hmm.
What the DHS social worker said when I asked her, I said, you know, well, after all that information, you know, why did you use them and why did you put these kids in the home? And they said, well, we tried to put kids in the home that we figured wouldn't be attractive to them. And, you know, that was just, to me, that was crazy. You can't do that.
Wouldn't be attractive to the children?
No, wouldn't be attractive to the molesters. We tried to put children in the home that wouldn't be attractive to the brother and to the father.
I see.
And, you know, you look at when someone says that in your presence, you sort your jaw drops. And, you know, having seen that, I felt that it was something that I couldn't walk away from. It wasn't an area that I could walk away from.
Mm-hmm.
But after doing a couple of cases, I decided that it would be better to actually get in and do the cases, the child neglect and abuse cases, at the time to try and prevent kids from being hurt
mm-hmm.
rather than trying to have to sweep up after they get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Because after they get hurt, the stuff that happens to them is so bad that you're in a situation where you are unable to really help the children. Like I said, the little boy who was beaten by his mother, he's still in a vegetative state after 14 years, and he's an adult now.
Mm-hmm. Now, taking this climate, it appears, or I'm going to go out and I suspect that the state would be discouraged in seeking prosecution of some of these families because it would be reflecting bad on them in their mindset. Or how aggressive is a state in initiating legal action and advocating for the children? How would you rate that?
I would say that it varies. The Department of Human Services is the agency in the state that's responsible for initiating cases and protecting children.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it depends on sort of the person that you get. There are some wonderful social workers and people within the department, and there are some others that are not very good.
Mm-hmm.
It also depends on the politics of the situation. The state of Hawaii was getting beat on for a while because they had too many kids in foster homes for too long a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
The way to solve that is just not to take as many cases. So that I think that there are cases today where you get reported that the department will not initiate a case where several years ago they might have.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things that happened was during the Lingle administration, the Department of Human Services was basically stripped. They laid off most of their young social workers because, of course, when you lay off, you always start from the most junior.
Mm-hmm.
And so the result was is that all the young workers that they had all got furloughed out, and what was left was basically the old hard cadre that had been there for a long time. These are people who had been line workers in the past, but now they're supervisors, and all of a sudden they're thrown back on the line. And I don't think that was necessarily what they wanted or what they'd envisioned mm-hmm. at that point in their career. Also, some of them, being a social worker for the state of Hawaii is a very hard job. Everybody's mad at you. And so, there's nobody who's glad to see you when you're coming through their door.
Mm-hmm.
And people get burned out. And the result is that they get cynical, they get hardened to some of the stuff, and they don't approach it with a great deal of enthusiasm. They pick results, and that's how things go. There are a number of different things that can happen that can make it very, very hard for the parents that are in the system.
Mm-hmm.
Also, for the kids.
Now, I'm just looking at some of the stats. They're very serious, and it quite concerning here in that it says nearly 4 children die every day as a result of abuse. Die.
Yes.
And then when we later get to talking about the statistics of the injuries and the molestation and the sexual harassment and the psychological abuse, in Hawaii, how many children annually do we lose to that? I know the chart, and it's kind of asking when is in 2009, 2010, because they haven't come up with the list in 2011 or 12. I didn't find it on the website.
We're lucky that we don't lose that many children, but it's true that there'll be one or two every year who die either as a result of child abuse or sometimes in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a procedure to deal specifically with kids who die, and there's a review board and things like that. It's very hard. It's very popular and very easy to say things like, we want to prevent child abuse, or mm-hmm. let's prevent child abuse. But at the same time, it isn't something that is really rocket science, that you don't beat your child so severely that the child dies. Mm-hmm. You don't leave your child untended so that the child wanders out in the street and some person, in the case of Cyrus Belt, picks him up and drops him off an overpass onto the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't think that that's something that requires a lot of instruction or counseling, but nevertheless, there are people who just do these things, and they do them probably because it's a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Child abuse, sexual abuse are generally things that run in cycles, and mm-hmm. the people who do it are people who've had it done to them.
Yeah, that was one of the things. Abused children are much more susceptible to a sexual predator.
Yes. And it's very hard to understand. You would think that if a kid has been beat up by his parents or been sexually abused by his parents, that that's the last thing in the world that he would do to his child. Or
mm-hmm.
her child.
Mm-hmm.
But yet it seems clear that it is a cycle, and that when people have had it done to them as they become adults, whether they've repressed the memories or whatever the reason is, that they will turn around and they will do it to their children.
Mm-hmm. Now, the number of children that have died, what percentage of them were in the state program and actively in the program, and let's say since 2006, is there any accounting of that, and how many were not involved in the state program?
There may be, and the kind of statistics that they have, you need to understand that all of these cases, one of the things that's difficult about neglect and abuse cases is that they all exist in their own little world and their own little closed world, because there is a requirement of confidentiality in each case, so that it is inappropriate to talk about a specific case mm-hmm. outside of that case or to talk across cases, so that the department knows what the statistics are, but no one else really does. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the figures that you get are very difficult to understand. The department also has this program, what they call voluntary case management or voluntary foster custody, where you can have a case that's reported, and instead of actually starting a case or bringing it into court, what they do is they enter into an agreement with the people to treat it administratively without filing a case. Now, whether those cases ever appear in their statistics, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be a system that's set up to manage, you know, not very serious cases, cases mm-hmm. where the kid hasn't been taken to the dentist or something like that, mm-hmm. you know, where it's not serious abuse or neglect, but it's just, you know, mild kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. However, the cases that you run into, mm-hmm. now, I don't have the widest experience in the world because obviously there's cases that I don't see, but I've run into two cases of serious head trauma where children had fractured skulls that they were treating through the voluntary case management system. And in one case, someone got very mad at me and my client for saying we didn't want to do it that way, that we wanted to be in the system. The thing about being outside the system is there's no judge watching. There's no GAL, guardian ad litem, to look and observe from the child's point of view what's going on. Mm-hmm. It's just the DHS and the parents, and that's it. And, you know, what they keep in that system and what kinds of cases they keep in that system, I have no way of knowing because I never see them.
And then they fall under the privacy.
Yes.
So they navigate in silence, in the catacombs of silence and personal.
And I've had people come to me where the social worker who's working with the people have told the parents who are working in this system that if you go talk to a lawyer, we're going to take your kid away. So that they do everything they can to keep those systems within themselves and within their own silence.
And so they generally the person is at the mercy of the social worker because that's the first contact.
Right, and they're terrified. You know, when you say to them, if you go talk to a lawyer, we're going to take your kid away, they believe it.
Mm-hmm. And that person is already in a predicament where there's doubt cast on his actions. So who is going to listen to he or she?
It's very hard. And, you know, I've had people sort of sneak into my office and say, you know, we want to talk to you, but we don't want anything, you know, said about it anywhere because they were afraid that if anybody knew that they were actually consulting with an attorney, they'd pull their kids. They'd stop visitation. They wouldn't let them see their children anymore. Now, the reality is they can't do that. But that's part of the problem is that if you keep them away from lawyers, you also keep them away from information. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you can control their actions. Now, whether those cases appear in the statistics, I have no idea.
And you keep them away from medical care, psychological care, the treatment, because these are signs or ways of detecting, right?
Well, what you do is you say to these people, look, we're going to send you off to a parenting course. And so you send them off, and they go to a parenting course, and they do this, that, and the other. And it may be you can do this for up to 60 to 90 days. It may be at the end of the case you'll just close the case and it never appears anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of that time, if the people aren't doing what you want or they haven't made the kind of progress that you want, then you can file a case and you can start something up that actually goes into the court.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it is, it's also a way of delaying the entry into the court because there are strict timelines on the Department of Human Services once a case comes into the court, where they're either supposed to reunify the child with their parents or else terminate parental rights.
Mm-hmm.
Now, termination of parental rights is a big deal because the United States Supreme Court and the Hawaii Supreme Court have both recognized that there is what they call a constitutionally protected liberty interest in maintaining the family unit together. So that the state of Hawaii cannot terminate parental rights unless they can prove to the court by clear and convincing evidence that the parents are not presently willing and able to provide a safe home for the children, and they will not become willing or able within a reasonably foreseeable time in the future. Mm-hmm. And the outside limit on that is 2 years. Now, one of the things that's strange about the system is that what that says is that the statute says that within 15 months, if the kid's in foster care and he's been in 15 months continuously, that they're supposed to file an action to terminate parental rights unless there's exceptional circumstances. But the reality is that kids can stay in foster care for 2, 3, 4, 5 years where the case just drags on and on and on and on. And you can go in there and you can holler about the statute and the fact that, you know, you're way past the time when parental rights should have been terminated. And for one reason or another, the system doesn't seem to care about that. And it's one of my pet peeves because the children, when they're in foster care, their lives go on.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a kid and you put him in a home, especially if that child comes right out of the hospital, because a lot of foster children will go directly from the hospital where mothers were drug exposed right into foster care. And so if a child has basically lived their whole 3, 4 years of their life in this foster home, mm-hmm. their foster parents are their parents. You know, the other people are maybe auntie and uncle, mm-hmm. but they are not really their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not fair to a child to simply take them and yank them out of this home after 3, 4 years and say, well, you know, it's sort of the puppy theory of child placement. We'll just take them away from these people and we'll put them back in this other place. And they may whine and whimper and wet the papers for a while, but then they'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it treats children as though they're objects, as though they're possessions, like they're furniture. And I really have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to the Carol Cox Show. My guest is Mr. Frank O'Brien, and we're discussing child abuse and neglect here in the state of Hawaii, and we will also be discussing foster care. And speaking of that, Frank, this report, the statistical report on child abuse and neglect for 2010, I'm looking at some numbers here, and hopefully I'm not skilled at the language, but I the basic gist of it is for the total population, Oahu is 60% of all the cases that exist, 60%, Kauai 6%, Maui 15%, the island of Hawaii is 19%. And what does that mean to the listener out there? Why is our number so high? Is it the population, or we're just mean-spirited people?
Well, I think that it's a number of factors. First of all, this is where the seat of government is, and there's a lot more agency here than there are on the neighbor islands.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, you also have a lot more judges here than you have on the neighbor islands,
mm-hmm.
Which means that there are more facilities to process cases. There's more facilities as far as services and resources here on Hawaii than in other places. I don't think that there's anything that distinguishes Oahu from any other place in terms of who commits child abuse and what percentage of the population commits mm-hmm. child abuse. It seems to be fairly stable. If you look at the statistics, it appears that the number of cases that are reported in Hawaii every year is about the same.
Mm-hmm.
There was a spike right after the economic crisis when everybody lost their jobs because I think people were home and frustrated and they took it out on their kids. But generally speaking, the numbers that get reported every year are about the same.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there is a more or less, I hate to say the word stable, but there's a stable percentage of people who don't treat their children well,
mm-hmm.
and that seems to be sort of self-perpetuating as you go along.
Mm-hmm.
There are some assumptions that are built into the system which I think are, I don't know whether you want to say, there's a bias in the system. The system assumes that most of the people who commit child abuse and neglect are poor, because most of the people who are provided, most of the cases are handled by attorneys that are provided by the state.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to qualify for that, you have to have very low income.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that child abuse and neglect is a condition only of people who are poor. but I think that they are the ones who get reported.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people who are better off have more cushions built into the fabric of society for them that protect them against getting reported. I don't necessarily think that they do less. It is interesting to watch, because when you have people who come into the system who are middle class or middle class up, and they come into the system, they are outraged. They're absolutely outraged, and they're screaming for their rights, and they're this and that, you know, and how can they get away with it, and they want to sue people right and left. People who come in who are economically disadvantaged, they've been whacked around so much that they sort of just go along. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been a fact of their life that the state is beat up on them one way and another, mm-hmm. and this is just one more way.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, I don't think that we're more mean-spirited here. I think there are more, we have a finer net here than perhaps they do on the other islands, just because of the number of people that we have who are involved and the facilities that are available mm-hmm. to do it. I think there's a much stronger effort here on Oahu to make people aware so that people watch and look. I've taught courses at the Medical School about identifying and reporting. Hawaii law requires certain people, as a matter of law, to report if they observe things that look like abuse or neglect.
Mm-hmm.
Policemen, teachers, doctors, social workers, psychologists, therapists, sports coaches are all people who are required by law to report if they see something that is appears out of the ordinary that looks like child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, it's very hard to do. I mean, I've been in Safeway where I've seen someone whack their kid across the face for, you know, acting out or spilling something. I mean, that's child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
But what do? I mean, you're so shocked when you see it. I mean, it's not like you're going to call 911 and follow them around till a cop comes.
Right.
So that it's also difficult for private citizens to actually do it, because they're afraid that people will know who it was, that people will retaliate against them. So that, and they, there's always the thing that I think is part of Hawaii, well, that's their business.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not going to interfere in someone else's business.
Now, looking at statistics here, the listener out there, they're probably saying, well, you say the numbers are high. What are the numbers? Just to give us a few sampling. Reported, and this is a subject you can speak to as well, there are reported numbers of reported cases, and then there's numbers of confirmed. So, for example, 2006, Oahu had 2,429, 2007, 2,826, 2,790 for 2008, and then 3,000, this must be that spike that you spoke about, the 3,753, and 2010, 2,512. But then the actual confirmed, where it was 2,429, only 1,242 were confirmed. And in 2007, 1,324. So that spike that we saw in 2009, where it was 3,753 reported, only 1,360 were confirmed. Does that mean that these cases had no truth to them, or are they just was submitted to the system that is flawed?
Well, the Department of Human Services had in the past an actual intake section. These were people whose only job was to field calls and go out and investigate allegations of neglect and abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, because of the layoffs, they've had to restructure, and it's sometimes hard to be sure, but I think now you basically have the same person investigating who is going to be responsible for the case later on. The thing about that is that spreads the person thinner, and they have less ability to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
When a case comes in, the first question is whether or not it's a credible story, and also whether there's enough information to give the department a basis to go forward, and is the person credible? They may not be willing to identify themselves. They may not give sufficient information about the people to let the department do it. Or the department may just decide it's not bad enough that we have to go out and look. Now, there's a Hawaii Supreme Court case that said that the Department of Human Services has what they call a special relationship with any child who is reported as a victim of neglect and abuse. And that it means that they have a duty to act reasonably to go out and investigate. But it's very hard to know. I mean, I've seen a lot of cases, and I've seen cases where they just chose not to believe. Or if the police go out, if they don't see bruises, they're not going to do anything, no matter what's been said. The department is supposed to go out within, if it's abuse or neglect, they're supposed to go out within 48 to 72 hours. A lot of times they don't get there. A lot of times they don't have the time. So that I think that as the numbers go down, I don't necessarily believe that the amount of abuse has gone down. I think we've either changed our standards or we just don't have enough people to go out and investigate and see whether or not these are really cases of abuse and neglect.
Now, is there any chance or potential for, let me describe it, in some enclaves or cities and counties, a chief of police might move in and he want to look good to see things have changed. So he lobbied the city council to take, for example, break-ins in cars where at one time Grand Theft Auto. So he advocates and he lobbies the lawmakers to reduce that to simple entry into a unauthorized entry into a vehicle. Doesn't mean that the crimes went down. It's just the definition. Is that possible in this case where it comes to relates to human beings and children?
It wouldn't surprise me. It is, as I say, I mean, the state of Hawaii was getting dinged by the federal government, and the federal government is the source of a great deal of the money that funds the programs involving foster parents and things like that. So the state gets a lot of money from the federal government. And if the state was getting dinged by the government for having too many kids in care, having them in care for too long, the easy way to do it is just to reduce the number of kids in care, you know, declare a glorious victory and go home. And to some extent, I think that's what happens a lot of the time.
Now, real quickly, military, and then we'll talk more about foster care. I note that in some of these, I hope you can speak to it, and there's so much. And you can go to the State Health Department's website and get this information and the details of it. But you talked about the military and the number of abuses that occurred in the military, and that the Army seemed to have a higher number than any of the services actually combined, it appeared.
Well, we first of all, I think, need to recognize what tremendous sacrifices the military families have been making recently. You have families where one of the members of the family have been going overseas, either to Iraq or to Afghanistan, on cycles where they go every 8 months or every year, and this puts tremendous pressures on the family. I think at one point the divorce rate here in Hawaii in Army families was up around 80% of these people that were going, because it was just more than the families could stand. I've had people come into my office where they obviously still loved one another, but they were getting divorced because the spouse who was remaining behind just couldn't take it anymore. Because, you know, when the person comes back from overseas, they've seen horrible things, they've been through horrible things, and they're a different person. And in the meantime, the person who stayed behind has been doing everything, and they're different people too. And so it puts tremendous strains on the family. And then you have people coming back with post-traumatic stress disorders and things like that. And the military, although it's better than it was, is still not necessarily very welcoming of things like that. And so you don't go get help. And so who do you take it out on? You take it out on your kids. So that it is a... I think that the fact that there are a fair number within the military is a product as much of the stresses that the family are being put under by being shipped over again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't that there's anything particular to military families other than the fact that they're subjected to stresses that most of us who sit out in the civilian world just can't understand.
Mm-hmm. And so quite often there's jurisdiction. Does the state have unobstructed access to the military cases or clients, or is there a partition that separates them in a protocol and, you know, and then paperwork and then the child falls through the crack?
No, if the case is reported in the state will take the case. There's a pretty good liaison between the military social workers and the state social workers.
Mm-hmm.
However, the military they handle their own prosecutions most of the time.
Mm.
And so although the case may go on the state side as far as the Child Protective Act case is concerned, the military may choose to court-martial their people because these things happen on military bases or they involve mm-hmm. military dependents.
Now, one of the things that jumps out at me is that we know there's now it's coming to surface the number of suicides that were existing in the Army, and for some while they withheld it. And not to date, I don't know why, because if we were able to see that, we would have, I'm sure our legislators would have given more money or something if we had quantified the issue or the problem. What does the military do? Or do you think they adequately fund, or in your opinion, and have you taken any cases against the military?
Well, I can speak, although I'm out of date. I mean, I was 6 years an Army JAG officer. And in the various places I was, one of the things that I learned is that you don't talk about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eyewash, they call it. As long as everything looks good, you know, then we just pretend it's okay and hopefully nothing will happen bad on my watch. The military doesn't like to air its dirty laundry. It doesn't like to talk about those things in public.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suspect, whether it was overt or sort of tacit, that there was pressure within the military not to talk about that stuff outside of the system. The military, when I was in Korea, they were having racial problems.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is back in 1970, but, you know, I was in Korea, and people were coming to me and saying that there's real racial problems going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to the command, and I said, you got a problem here, and there's something that you need to do about it. You need to start dealing with it. And they said, well, we want to talk to the people who say there's a problem. And I said, do you think they're crazy? They don't want to get killed. And so they didn't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And after I left, about 6 months or a year after I left, they were having riots, and they had to, you know, use their own armored personnel carriers to control the riots. I mean, it was a terrible thing.
To control their own military people.
Yes.
Yeah. And I didn't participate in the riots, but at Camp Humphrey, Osun, I was there during that time and can speak to what was happening, and it was, the air was thick. And I mean, they call you a boy or the N-word quicker than they would say good morning to you. And it was, but you dare not speak out about it. And,
right.
And that was shocking for myself because I was attached to certain units traveling and drifting back and forth. So I wasn't really there in the thick of things all the time, but I would go into the various bases and you'd see it, and then you'd see the fights and the racial fights, and it was downplayed.
Yes, and, you know, when you went to them, they didn't want to hear it. You know, they didn't want to take responsibility. They didn't want to go to their superiors and say, look, we've got a problem here.
Mm-hmm.
So what they say to you is, well, bring me someone who'll tell me that.
Right.
And, of course, no one was going to do that.
Bring me the guy that wants to lose his head, his career.
That's right.
So we can make an example of him, and then we'll get rid of the race issues real quick.
And so I think that is a culture that still probably permeates the military, and that is we don't talk about stuff that makes us look bad outside of the military. I'll tell you one other military story. It's a fairly short one. when I was at Tripler Hospital, I had a fellow came and he was put in the psychiatric ward. And at that time, he was the youngest E7 in the United States Army. So he was a real goer. And he was Special Forces. And if you remember back in Vietnam, they had a raid that went into Vietnam and tried to rescue people from a prison camp in Vietnam. And they went in and there wasn't anybody there, but they made a big publicity deal about how they'd done it. Well, the reason he was in the psychiatric ward is he's one of the people who'd gone in ahead of time, you know, to scout. And he knew it was empty because he'd seen that it was empty. And so when they said, we're going back, he said, you people are crazy. I'm not going because there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that, they put him in the psychiatric ward.
To conceal and hide.
That's right. Rather than acknowledge what he had to say, you simply blame him. And that's why people don't step forward.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of the military as well as the state, what would you recommend if the military were listening today, and I'm sure they are probably because whatever reason, what pointers or suggestions would you give them to just take and look at it, that these are human beings and the prodigy and the children of families and the wives and husbands? What would you, as a former JAG, as an attorney that now practices, what's a straight skin? What would you recommend?
One of the things, and this is true whether you're talking about the state or the military, you know, there's nothing wrong with any of these systems that money and services wouldn't cure. If you provide places where people can go, respite, you make it okay for people to say, I've got a problem, you know, I need help with my kids, then that is the kind of thing that would help. If you've got servicemen coming back who have really significant problems and really serious issues, that it's okay for them to go and say, look, I've got a real problem, and not be afraid that that's going to affect their promotability or their ability to stay in.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, all of it comes down to making more services available, having more things available to allow people to educate themselves or learn what resources are available to help them to deal with the issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the military is good about, military has sort of the idea that the spouse stays home and they're the true blue and, you know, they do the job and they handle everything. But when you think of what they're handling, I mean, it really is a job because you're handling all the bills, all the car payments, the kids, getting them to school, probably working a job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it is also, the military is a very closed place. You know, you're dealing with the other spouses who don't work, who mm-hmm. are a very chatty kind of, catty kind of place, and that can be a problem as well.
Mm-hmm.
In the military, whenever something happens, whenever you get accused of something, as a JAG officer, what I would tell people is, you got the disease. I said, you can walk down the middle of a crowded corridor and no one will touch you.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's afraid that if they're associated with you, it's going to rub off.
Mm-hmm.
If they stand up for you, it's mm-hmm. going to rub off.
Yeah. Now, you know, personally, I'm moved, and it's painful when you look at military people. And they're not just asking. I know it's a volunteer army, but that doesn't mean we should abuse them or neglect them or ignore their needs. But we ask the military people for something greater than we ask of any American citizen, in my opinion, because, okay, you're serving, you go in a uniform, and you're sent off to war. And your family is fending for itself.
I agree with you.
And we don't have the mechanism in place, and we treat them, you know, the old saying, a third class, a second class citizen. If we were to really make an honest assessment of how we treat the military, and I don't mean charging up the hill for being all American and all of that, singing that kind. I'm talking about standing back and looking what we tax of them, ask of them, and then in turn we treat them with just the simplest. The families are abandoned, the wife is under stress, or the husband, whoever's left behind, and they get in this cycle, and there's so many moving parts that I'd collapse in today's arena if I was submitted to that.
Well, one of the, again, recent experience, I represented a Marine sergeant and his family. And one of the things that happened in the middle of what I was doing, I came back from lunch one day, and this is a tough Marine. I mean, this is not, you know, any wimpy guy. And he was sitting off in a corner at the courthouse, and he was crying. And I said, what happened? He said, well, he just got word that one of his friends got shot in Iraq. And so even if you're not there, you have loss as a regular part of your daily existence. And what children learn at school and being part of the military community is parents don't come back. You know, because they see parents who were kids who have their parents die all the time. And so when people are reassigned, these kids are terrified over the fact that their parents are going to die. Now, a 6, 7, 8-year-old kid shouldn't be dealing with the issue of my dad's or my mom's going to die. But that's what they face, and they face it on a regular basis. And, you know, saying, you know, that we've got a counselor available or something like that really doesn't do it. Because you can't explain to a kid that, you know, it's okay, or, you know, we hope your daddy will be back, or there's going to be lots of people watching out for daddy. Kid says, my dad's going to die. And they take that to bed with them every night. And the mothers take it to bed with them. So no wonder that kids act up. No wonder that they have problems.
And so hopefully the military will do something about it and start looking at it from a different perspective, that they need to give greater service to that to protect the children, but also to protect the families, the husband and wives, and not just on a superficial, you know, Photoshop occasion like with Miss Obama. I appreciate what she's doing, but I think she should pull the bedclothes back on this whole thing and really get down to the real crux of it, the real issues, protecting the children, the abuses, and all of that, and the families and the wives and whatever.
I agree with you, but it takes something like when they... back in Washington, where it was at Bethesda or wherever it was, where they had all the wounded veterans coming back, and they were living in quarters that were moldy and had stopped up toilets. And it was only when someone finally saw that and publicized it that finally something was done. And of course, Congress and everybody went crazy once they saw it. But that had gone on for years. And it, again, the military, nobody said anything. You know, you don't, if you're in the military, you don't say anything. But someone from the outside, someone finally talked, and bam, everybody went nuts. And how can this happen?
How do people contact you? We're coming down the last minute or so. If you would, please give your contact information.
And my phone number is 543-1810. And as I say, I'm a private attorney. I'm not legal aid or anything like that. I do charge for my services. But if people have questions, they can call me there.
And do you have a website or any contact?
I don't. Okay. I don't. I'm a one-man show.
So Mr. Frank O'Brien and
543-1810.
Is there anything else before we got a minute if you want to close
on? If there are people, well, I would say this. We have a good foster care system in Hawaii. The only thing it lacks is money. One of the problems is kids don't vote. And these are people at the low end of the food chain. So it's always nice to talk, but what we need is, if we had more money for more social workers, more money for more judges, more money for lawyers and GALs and all the things that make the system work, then you would have a system that would be a wonderful system. But as long as it lacks the money and as long as it lacks the commitment to really do something to help these kids, really help these kids, then you're going to continue to have tragedies. You're going to continue to have kids who get hurt and get hurt again.
Now, I'd like to invite you back because I shared with three people that I was going to have you on, and they were excited. They couldn't make it today. They want to call in and share some experiences. Would you be available in a couple of weeks if I contact you and we can take this subject up again?
I'd be happy to.
All righty. Well, thank you. I appreciate you joining me.
Okay.
Aloha, and we are going to see you in the next hour for the second half, and we'll be back shortly.
In the naked city. yeah. When you're all alone and all your heart earns.
This is KWAI on the 1080 on the AM.
You go walking down Broadway, watching people catch the subway. Take it from me, don't ask for a helping hand, 'cause no one will understand. Find you, and they will mess you around. Let me tell you, millions will watch you. Have mercy now, as you sink right down to the ground.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Hey, good morning again. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Thank you for joining me in the early hour with Mr. Frank O'Brien. And if you have any questions or need any help, feel free to call him. And you can also, if you have questions with about this and trying to navigate your way, send me an email at carol@carolcox.com. I don't give legal advice, not an attorney, but I can steer you to the right people. Or if you're having a problem, you're a social worker or you're just witnessing something and don't want to get involved, call me. Kids need any kind of help they can get. So anyway, it's always nice. There's a great family here of shows of here at KWAI. And what's so nice about it, you, the general listener, can come on and you can have a show. And it's not rocket science. If you got your heart and mind in it, you can do it. And I'll give you a phone number, and maybe there's something out here that you can come in and speak with management. And I encourage you, because this is an opportunity to get the word out and express yourself. So if you are interested, 523-3868 is the number for the administrative office, and they'll treat you good. And hey, I'm loving it. 4 years I'm headed on now, and I never thought I would ever do this. And at the end of the day, I won't grow old and be a grumpy old man. I can come in here and express myself, anger some, excite others, and entertain some. And who knows? You can do the same thing. Probably got better message than I have. But do join us at KWAI here. And so there's a generally I don't like to talk about the news. You know, the current, because if there's a lot of people mulling over it, it's going to be chewed, digested, ingested, and spit up and regurgitated and talked again until we get ridiculous. But I'm always excited. I have Michael Ostendorf, attorney, who you know have been on the show numerous times and part of the family here. So he and I were talking, and just things clicked, and you know, this issue with Senator Daniel Inouye. And let me say something right up front. Senator Inouye earned his honor. He served the country. He did great things. He showed his loyalty to the U.S. and to the people here. Love that part. But something's going wrong. And so if people got a right in newspapers and put out a petition to seek apologies from a campaign candidate, something's wrong with that. And so that's what we're going to be speaking about this morning, some of that, and then I have something. We'll talk briefly about the neighborhood board, but, we'll honor you and respect what you've done for the country, but when you go beyond that and start demanding, that changes the whole atmosphere. And so anyway, good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Carol.
So you tell me what you think about this. I don't want you to hurt anybody's feeling now, because I've learned there's some sensitive, thin-skinned politicians out there. Yeah. And I didn't know snakes could have, reptiles could have thin skin.
Leave it up to you to take it down one more level.
Hey, I'm so offended that someone would even waste the ink on this,
I don't think that someone that served this state, this country as well as he did, could be that thin-skinned. Mm-hmm. There's just no way. Yeah. I mean, he's a war hero. He has been a senator ever since. Mm-hmm. How can he be insulted by anything? That just ask him a simple question.
Right.
You're flying first class, the rest is sitting in the back in the economy.
Yeah.
What does it feel like to sit in first class?
Yeah.
Travel in the back of the plane once.
Mm-hmm.
Sit down. Sit down with the folks who eat at McDonald's, because that's the only thing we can afford.
Well, and the hero status is great, but there are some real issues here. I mean, the rail is not something that we need to be apologetic about. And we don't know the first dollar where it's going and who's spending it and who's going to earn it.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the dollar, because I'm getting too old to hear the check is in the mail.
Yeah.
I mean, I have not once seen a quote mm-hmm. or heard on TV or in the media where the good senator actually said the check is in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
It's always, it's coming, let's not worry about it, no worries, no worries, no worries.
Mm-hmm.
No, I do worry.
Mm-hmm.
We're going broke. This state is going broke. We don't even have enough money to fund our pension funds.
Mm-hmm.
We're at a 20% level. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no money. So where's this money going to come from? That's my biggest worry. They're mm-hmm. selling us another pipe dream.
Yeah.
They're building those monoliths. We're going to have 15 of these things standing up, looking like something out of Egypt. But we're going to have a rail. Again, Birmingham, Alabama, there's a prime example. They were going to go and do a $5 billion sewer system.
Yeah.
In the 20-some years I've been here now, the price keeps going up.
Right.
But there's one thing I know. When the government tells me in this state it's going to cost me X,
mm-hmm.
I know it's never going to be X. Mm-hmm. It's always something else. There's always a cost overrun, a change order, something not anticipated. This whole system is built on change orders.
Yeah, and also give us a loan, approve a loan now, in case something unforeseeable goes wrong. Well, first of all, you know what's going to go wrong. You know you don't have the money.
That's right.
And so you know that once you've engaged, you are going to need that money. And so the guys and girls that are over there signing off on it, I find that to be more offensive than discussing about people at McDonald's, you know.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, you have a debate. One guy keeps saying, I'm just following the law.
Right.
Well, that's all fine and dandy if you're just following the law, but show me the money. Mm-hmm. Because part of the law is that there's also funding, that there is money. Don't tell me now we're going to float some bonds or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, if this was really a good deal, Wall Street already would have bought into it. Mm-hmm. You would have a bunch of bankers financing the whole thing, rubbing their hands, counting the money, how much money they're going to make on these bonds. Mm-hmm. This is just another one of those toxic ideas. It's not going to fly.
Well, what bothers me is that where the apologies should be made, Kurt Caldwell should apologize and go off to Never Never Land. I mean, this is the same guy who's getting tax breaks for his old house that he wasn't paying taxes on. That's what I want to hear an apology for. I want to see him apologize. I want to see Peter Carlisle apologize to the people for never telling them that he was for the rail and would be fighting for the rail when we thought he was a prosecutor and was going to be straight arrow. But we now know that he is part of this drum corps, beating the drums. And that's what I want to hear. I want to hear an apology from these two dudes who needs to rely on John White, for example, who's a former staffer for Mazie Hirono, who is as Danny Noy says, Senator Noy says, they're his kind of gals, Hanabusa So I'd like to hear an apology from Senator Noy, who takes a son of the state, President Barack Obama, who navigated his way through politics, but apparently because he didn't go see Dan the Man and get permission, like he stuck Ed Case. Well, you didn't get permission from me. It's not your turn. I want to hear apologies on that. That's what we need to hear apologies for, right?
Right.
In my opinion.
Well, you just mentioned straight arrow. The only straight arrow in that pack is Ben Cayetano.
Mm-hmm.
You get what you see. He has been straight. When he was governor, he was straightforward. He made some tough decisions. He laid off people. Although I never had actually met any of these people that supposedly were laid off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he just retired a bunch of empty positions.
Mm-hmm.
But he cleaned up, and that's what we need in this city. This city, you know, whoever this new guy is that came in from the airport, and he made some comments about, you know, when he drove in from the airport, mm-hmm. how bad traffic was and so on. You know what? This is like a third world country. I mean, let's face it. And there has been no change. I've been here 23 years and nothing changed.
Yeah.
It's the same old bad road from the airport to town to wherever I'm traveling. Now they're talking about Kahuku and a landfill out there.
Right.
Are they for real? They're going to put no garbage trucks on that road? You can't even navigate that place as a tourist.
Right.
No. What they need to look at is the future, and that's traffic congestion.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't heard one of them talk about traffic congestion.
Yeah.
I mean, Ben has, but what about the other two? The rail is not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The rail will make no difference. So what are we going to do? We're going to start walking?
Yeah. Well, you know, I had something shared with me that the people that manages the bus and Yoshino and the guys there, that they're holding back on payment to some of the smaller contractors, you know, trying to make sure that this bus thing, they bleed the bus thing. But here's the problem. If you invest and steal all the money and put it in the train, now you're going to really have trouble because the bus is not going to work timely and efficiently, or not that they are perfect now, but imagine it getting worse. So I look at this, and I'm thinking, so these three guys, this John White and Kurt Caldwell and Peter Carlisle, found it necessary to beg for an apology, demand of an apology, and go public with it on behalf of the state senator. Right there is enough to say, okay, guys, give us your keys to the office. You're done. You're useless. You don't have a place in our government, because if your skin is that skin, and it's not you being attacked and criticized or just being talked about, it was a senator who's been around a long time.
Yeah.
Good morning. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, the comment.
Your background, Ed. Your background, your radio down.
Yeah. You know, I'm a Kekio guy. I'm born and raised in Hawaii. Lived here all my life except for my military, 30 years in the military away from here. This rail business, I live in Nava Beach. I'm for the rail. Definitely. It should have been built back when Rain Mancho killed it, because it would have gone from Waikai to West Oahu to UH, and it would have cost a fraction of what it would have cost, what it's going to cost now. But listening to your guest, he said, talking about this state being a third world country, why do people who think this third, why do they move here if they think this is a third world country? Secondly, majority of the people against the rail are transplants from the mainland. Now, wait,
Ed, hold on, Ed. You don't know that, and you know, let's, when you make a statement like that, most people that are against it is from the mainland. This is a truth and honesty station. We're not going to sit here and let you inject it. But go ahead. I just have to pull your tail on. No.
All these people didn't move here from the mainland.
No. Well, you know, you are an immigrant, a product of an immigration. So let's not hang it on that.
I didn't immigrate here. I may be a product, but
So you can't split hairs.
A product of immigration.
Exactly. So that brings us to the center stage now. Tax dollars got nothing to do with people from the mainland. If the program is flawed and the people have a right, and you got to admit that the way this thing was presented to the people, by hook and crook. I'm sorry, you can't dismiss that. Now, I appreciate you saying you're for the rail, and I think we need a rail or need mass transit. I'm not arguing that. It's all the hook and crookery that went on about it, Ed.
I understand that. Whenever there's big business, there's always people with their pockets wide open. But, you know, living in Pebble Beach, when I worked at downtown, if the rail was here, I would have saved, I don't have my calculations, 5 days a week driving to Queen Emma Street, year after year. The amount of gas, of course, it was cheaper when I was working. If it was today, the annual gas rate would be, and wear and tear in car, and depreciation in car.
Okay, we've heard. Let me ask you this.
I would use my car if I had to go to the doctor or go shopping at a big box somewhere. I wouldn't ride the rail to work. I'd take my car.
Okay, let me ask you this, Ed. I want to keep this on point here, and we hear these discussions. What do you think about the requirement or the need or the desire for an apology, and can you speak to that? I mean, if rail was great and what have you, where do these thin-skinned people, why do they introduce that into the game when, if it's a good thing, why are they distracted and stopping along the way to beg apologies?
Well, this apology to Daniel Noy for saying that he's out of touch, a statement like that requires an apology. I don't know what other apologies the native are being negative against someone else. Mm. All the person said was, Kaitama said, he is out of touch, and that's considered to be an insult by Inouye, which I think is ridiculous.
Yeah.
To be upset about it, you know, because he thinks he's the king, and nobody can say anything about him. Thinking about, you know, where you live. Now, I decided I wanted to live in Las Vegas. I went there for a while. I didn't like it, so I came back here. I like the economy, the cheap homes there. If I don't like a place, I'm leaving. I'm not going to go there and try to change it. I go find someplace else where I'll be happy with. But to call this place, I'm living in a third world country. Yeah. Planes leave every day. If you don't like it, you know, you can leave.
Well,
that's my philosophy.
Yeah, that's what they say in Mississippi, too, but it ain't going to happen. And nobody's going to get on a plane, leave, and it is a third world country. And
most of my family live in, a lot of them live in Las Vegas. Well, they got out of here because the cost of living was too high and they couldn't handle it.
Well, but I mean, the problem is when people, they loosely use the term third world, but it's not an invitation to start to attack, well, you know, they're this and they're immigration, they immigrated here. Of course they did. But it's their money that's going to be sucked out of their back pockets and their bank accounts to build a rail system.
I agree. This is a third world country. The roads are there.
Oh, there we go.
But, you know, I decide, well, you know, the rest of a few years of my life, I'm going to live here in this third world country. Mm-hmm. But I don't have to go out and work anymore. Well, I've 30 years in the military has taken care of me for the rest of my life. But for newcomers to come and say, this is a third world country, then, and I don't like the politics, I don't like the Democrats who've been there for 40 years, you're insulting the voters. Because the voters for 40, I'm a Republican, I don't like the Democrats. For 40 years, the majority were Democrats, voted the Democrats in. So you cannot insult.
And for 40 years,
and for 40 years, you've been looking at the same buildings coming down from the airport going towards Waikiki, for instance. I mean, you look at this and you ask people, what do you see? Mm-hmm. People travel, you know? I mean, just take a look at Kalihi. What does it look like to you?
Yeah. Well, first of all, and John got other callers, Ed got other callers, but
here's the...
I don't want to shut
ready
you off.
Go but, of course.
Okay, hit them straight and long. So anyway, the bottom line is, yes, it is a third world country if we act like a third world country. It's still the United States of America, but the nation of Hawaii. But again, when you're taking people's tax dollars, they have a right to bicker, whine, moan, complain, but not to ask for apologies on behalf of a senator who says, Mufi Hanneman. Who is spearheading this, Mufi Hanneman. We'll talk about him in Carlisle. But I'll get to the callers here.
Well, you're talking about people who are not my favorite also, so
yeah,
anyway.
Okay.
Thanks for listening.
All righty. But anyway, also, one thing, I love it when people say the Democrats have been here for 40 years. Well, that tells you how inept the Republicans are, because if they can't get it together in 40 years and their numbers are dwindling, hello, something's wrong out there, boys. Hello. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, Mr. Cox, thanks for taking my call. The last caller is a prime example of why this state is in the shape that it's in the city. And I give you kudos, you and your guest, I forgot his name.
Michael Ostendorf.
Yes, Michael, for allowing him to rant on and make his point, even though his points are irrational. He seems to have tunnel vision. And I'll be kind to him and say that maybe it's because of his age. He sounds like an elderly gentleman. And he's lived a long time. He has some wisdom, but it seems to be kind of warped. He seems to have tunnel vision. He seems to overlook the fact that, sure, we need some type of mass transportation. But has he looked around to look at our city infrastructure, the sewer infrastructure, the roads, the school system, the jail system, the mental health care system? And you talked about child abuse. Earlier in your first segment, he isn't addressing any of that, even thinking about any of that. He seems to be focused on, you know, his feelings being hurt. And I think you're completely right. We have, you know, we have bloated government, state and city government. We have duplication of department heads and employees. We can't continue to sustain this type of municipal and city type of government. Mm-hmm. And we have to do something about these roads. So, sure, we need mass transportation, but I don't know when it's really become viable and effective. It's going to be some years from now. So why don't we take that money and concentrate on getting the sewer systems fixed, you know, and the other things that really are primary and most basic to human needs. I won't go on any further other than to say that I think you're right, Dan Inouye. He's been in office too long. He's an elderly man. It's time for him to retire. Because his judgment is impaired, too. And he uses his clout like a gangster to marginalize other people. As far as President Barack Obama, you never hear him talk about Barack Obama in any kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have, Barack Obama is invisible, and he doesn't exist.
He's out of touch.
Right there.
Yeah, he's out of touch, and when. Not that he has to vote for and support Barack Obama, but remember he was standing out on the front line in opposition of Barack and had negative comments. So I'd say he's out of touch, and time is to move on. And I'm not advocating for Ben Cayetano, but I do applaud him for speaking up. And that's what we need. We need somebody to come along because, that's the way it is. Let me get to the other caller, and thank you for calling. Aloha. Good morning, Carlos.
Hi.
Good morning, Filippo. How are you?
Hi, brother. Aloha. I just wanted to make a little comment on the, not the last caller, but the one before that one. Has mentioned that his closing statement was that he don't like people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the worst subject. He must be a very lonely person.
Yeah.
With all the opolis in the world, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have people. What are you going to be, right?
Yeah.
But, the thing about it is people seem to forget, government does not provide a service to make money. And the bus system is no different than what the rail is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
They're covering up the bus. They don't want it to exist because it's been operating in the red ever since it existed. We got the best bus service, but it's costing us money. Yeah, and the rail will be no different. In fact, the rail will probably be even worse.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't have the ridership that they are projecting or propagandizing.
Mm-hmm.
They won't at all.
Yeah,
and the whole thing, brother Carol, as you well know, the reason why people like you, myself, your guests, and on the people that call in, majority of them, is because all we want is something that is porno, that is right.
That's true.
All we want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we should, that's all we deserve as being citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Being porno to the people.
Yeah.
That's
okay, brother.
Hey, thank you, Filippo.
Keep it up.
Aloha.
That's so true, what he just said. And this is why I think when someone advocates to look at all the facets, not just only rail. For instance, we have traffic congestion. We have lanes that close at 5:30. You have three lanes merging into two or one and causing congestion. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why is anybody expected to park at 5:30 for the night in a metropolitan area? So unless we have a mayor who is willing to look at all the aspects of how can we work with this traffic problem?
Right.
Because the rail is not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would like to have mass transit, and yes, I agree with the first one. We should have had it 20, 30 years ago, But it's just to build that one spur from Ko'olina to Waikiki is not going to do the trick. We need more than that.
Yeah. Well, I would say, and we have Bob on the line, I would say in regards to apologies, my concern is talking about the rail because it sickens me to know that nobody goes to jail in this. It sickens me that we know how the rail is being shoved down our throat and how hook and crook is going on and heart being formed and girlfriends being hired and friends being hired and big salaries. And we're still debating whether rail. So my point is that, look, Mufi Hanneman, who has never, nothing he's touched, he doesn't have the Midas touch. I wish there wasn't radio and I could say what I really want to say. But this man, whatever he touches doesn't turn to gold. It might be yellow, but it ain't gold. And we're now at the threshold of talking about he's in the debate whether he will be voted for as Congress, into Congress. That's not a third world country because in third world, they make decisions when things go wrong. They make them go right. However, but at least they've been around a long time. They may not have skyscrapers, but they send to take their crooked leaders eventually, and it boils over. And so when we got Caldwell, who was appointed, and that's Danny Noy's man, boy, I should say, Carlisle got in, but he was whispering with Dan Inouye. He didn't speak against. And then you got Mufi Hanneman, and they're running around now asking for an apology. I mean, come on. You know, what is it there? Underwear too tight or something? Something's wrong with these guys. I mean, politician want an apology.
There's nothing factually incorrect with the statement that he's out of touch.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I go back to first class. He flies first class. I'm sorry, he doesn't sit in the back of the plane.
Yeah.
That's it. It's just that simple.
Look at Caldwell's shoes, $300, $400 shoes, right? I mean, let's look at his church now. The guys dress well. Get in touch with the real people. Come on the Carol Cox Show. Don't run over there and, to the other stations and talk pretty. And come in here and answer some questions. Mufi Hanneman, come in here and get down in the gutter with us, as you describe. You know, that's being out of touch, you see. Bob, go ahead. You have a comment, a question?
Just a comment. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Thanks for being on the air. And I will fill in the words for the Goofy Mufi. Everything he touches turns to pus. He has never done nothing for this state but for himself and his friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had direct contact with the guy, and he's kind of like a worthless politician.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get back to the rail, I would like to see the figures of all of the people that ride the bus down the corridor that the rail is going to be on. You add all them up, and I bet you that rail will never even come close to the amount of people that it's going to carry, that the bus carries.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And we're going to spend billions of dollars, and you know it's going to go away, whatever it was, 5.7. That thing might even, reality, could even double. And, you know, by the time that it's finished, which is years and years ahead, like 7 years, they say, or five to 7 years, you know, everything that's done into this state has never been on time and on budget. So, you know, people are dreaming that this thing is going to solve any of our traffic problem.
Right, right. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
You too.
All right.
See you guys later.
Now, they need to look at the entire traffic pattern. Every time we have a holiday, every time school is out, you can make the same route in 5 minutes. You wouldn't think you're in the same place. As soon as school starts, boom, there you're sitting. In
mm-hmm.
traffic.
Mm-hmm.
You can walk. You watch people walk faster than we move in traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Just take a look at
they
it.
Do.
They do. I mean, sometimes I just feel like parking and, well, you know.
Follow the bicycle. Right. Sometimes you're parking and you see people walking along the sidewalk and you get up to the light and there they are. Well, how did this happen?
Right. That's why I would like to have a mayor who will work with people to study the traffic pattern instead of just saying, I'm the mayor.
Right.
I've been the mayor for 2 years and give me another 2 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Because of what?
And I'm happy with the landfill position. You know, that was like, I mean, come on. So speaking of apologies, and I'd like to keep it real. Here's something I would like to the Mayor Caldwell, former Mayor Mufi Hanneman, and Daniel Inouye apologize to the people. And this dude, John White, who lost by the skin of his chin over there to running for city council against Ernie Martin. I mean, we got the best of the worst, but the worst of the best, you know, whatever. Hired guns. I'm looking at right now the Leawood Community Benefit Packages. I went and scanned maybe 1,000 documents the other day at Sam Moku's office, Community Development. Here's the apology I think is due for the taxpayer. Nearly $3 to $4 million approximately was given to Mufi Hanneman to hand to his cousins, his friends, and his supporters that helped him run for office. They can't balance their books. They can't show proper receipts. The workers there at Sam Moku's office now are struggling to sort through garbage, receipts that don't exist, things that no accounting of. And nearly $4 million. Hanneman gave his cousin money in this. I want an apology for that. And I want the mayor, current mayor, former prosecuting attorney, to initiate under his authority, because it's under his watch now, to go in there and demand that each individual that received monies immediately show the accounting. They bought game boxes, PlayStations, Wii's, cookies, crackers, and what have you. And yet, talking about being out of touch at McDonald's, you should see some of the places these people ate with the taxpayers' dollars. That's what I want to hear a subject about. I don't want to see the newspapers writing about Daniel Inouye got his feelings hurt, or John White thought we should ask if it's, you know, sign in and tell Ben to get in his place. That's wrong. So right now I'm asking the mayor, I don't know if he's listening, but ask that you immediately write a formal letter to each grant recipient and say to them, immediately come forward, bring your money and your accounting, and then go ahead and place a lien on the homes, place a lien on the jobs, and any city worker that was involved with this matter and this money that is missing that can go unaccounted for and was used improperly, you get fired. You can't work for the city and owe us and steal from us. That's the kind of apology I'm waiting to hear. And then let's see the mayor and Kirk Caldwell, because you see, Caldwell was appointed by Murphy. Look at this little thing, how it worked out, guys. You know, this isn't about rail. It's about people railroading the taxpayer. And so here's the neighborhood board. The neighborhood board, for example, I'm investigating a matter, and I'm going to talk about it extensively next week, hopefully. But I'm investigating a matter that supposedly was cleared by Chuck Toto per the Tom Heinrich of the Neighborhood Board Commission, where there's a Brian Mick. Now, the allegations was Brian Mick was using, who worked for Murphy's campaign, who was a city neighborhood board employee, was working and using, and the allegations now is that Jay Ishibashi and Brian Mick were using the copying machines in the neighborhood board office to the commission's office to print brochures and color brochures for Murphy Hanneman's campaign as governor. Now, I want to hear an apology from City Ethics Department, because Heinrich said this matter was already investigated. And let me tell you, and it was that's what the claim was, that it was unfounded. Well, I contacted Chuck Toto of Ethics, and he couldn't say yet. He said they're still looking at it. He'll get back to me. But just a little evidence, and I won't go into greater details, but they say that Heinrich said that it was looked at and was no problem. But here's what the facts are. I have in my little hot hands here an email, and I'll just read it to you. It's from Brian Mick, who was accused, allegedly, using this printing machine or the copying machine to print Murphy Hanneman's brochures, costing a lot of money, or they wouldn't be doing it. So, Ford, this is to Bambi Wong. Product security information request. And this is his statement. Bambi, we need to just do this ASAP. Hopefully the magic card will also work on the Xerox downstairs, since they are the same models. We need to do this for the color printer. The feature is called the image overwrite. Do you know who we would contact? And this is... Brian, let me make the second question that Work Center actually doesn't use code. He is writing to ask that this be erased. Now, if the boss is not excited about erasing something from the computer or from the printing machine, why is a lowly employee bugged about cleaning up and deleting information, right? As to how to wipe the images currently stored on the hard drive, that's what the on-demand image overwrite feature in the MI overwrite kit will do. When the system administrator initiates an on-demand overwrite, any partition on the hard disk where images files could be stored will be overridden. Now, I'm sorry, folks. If Chuck Toto found that there was nothing there, these emails say that Brian Mick was gravely concerned that he needed to have the hard drive erased. Now, why do you suppose that he wanted to erase? I want to hear an apology on that part. Let's get down to the real things that should be addressed and apologized for. Ripping the taxpayers off, Murphy Hanneman, printing files and using things and employees improperly, and Chuck Toto for dragging his feet and saying, and Tom Heinrich for sharing with me that these were unfounded, but these emails say something totally different. So my feelings are hurt. I want an apology. What do you think, Mike?
I think, as a taxpayer, I just want my money back.
Yeah, I would be willing to forego three hots and a cart for some of them. Send them to jail. We need some action. We need some aggressive real politicians. And I think what I believe is...
A straight shooter?
Right. And I think the smear tactics that we saw here in this, with John White initiating and Ben apologizing and whatever, I think they know not only Ben is probably not just focusing on the rail. And I know because I've spoken with Ben Cayetano personally, spent some time with him, and he's looking at many issues, recycling and whatever. You don't hear Carlisle. Carlisle has never come to me. Caldwell will never come to me to ask anything. But they did. They want to be informed, the Cayetano men, want to know what's going on out there. They're reaching out, shaking hands, and not just begging for apologies. That I can respect. I'm not campaigning for Ben, but I can respect that compared to what we're seeing. You see?
Right. I think he's concerned. I think he's worried as a citizen for the state. He's just here to serve. That's the way I look at it. I mean, he doesn't have any political aspirations. I mean, we're going from governor to mayor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just wants to help. That's the way I look at it. He wants to clean house and make sure that we still have a place to live at instead of going into bankruptcy. Like, just Google it, Birmingham, Alabama. Same thing. All they wanted to do was have a new sewer system.
Mm-hmm.
They rushed to it. Every cousin got some money in the beginning, and they still don't have a sewer system.
Right. And this is what, again, not campaigning for any one person, but I would say let's look at the millions of dollars that were squandered and spent now to clean up Miley Stream. Look at the landfill that goes on and on, at least the millions of dollars and the medical waste and the mishandling of that. When did they ever even speak to it? Not just an apology. So I think these boys saw now. They see, they're looking down the barrel. That's what, if I could describe it right, I don't advocate violence.
They feel threatened.
They know, and they know that this city is so contaminated with scum and people that have been handpicked by Hanneman. Why on earth, and this document that I have spells it out, why Caldwell was originally supported by Hanneman, prodded with his hand, you know, and... But then he became in favor and good and close with the electors and what have you. So Hanneman, in a panic, don't want anybody to steal this thunder of his light. So he gravitated to Carlisle, you see, and threw his support there. But I got documents in this now. I'll give you an example with Carlisle, what were the apologies. I'm reading one of the grantees' package. This is from Mufi Hanneman's cousins that got the package. And he talks about holding this event, and he spends some $700 or so. I don't know the exact amount. I don't have the document in front of me. But for a banner to put Carlisle on. So while Carlisle is laying back and low, but he's using all of the bus stops and all of the listening posts that Mufi Hanneman is put in place and left in place. That's the apology. I want these behind the door and behind in the dark rooms of night and having Mufi Hanneman having direct access. That's what I want to hear, an apology. I want to see some openness, some transparency to these four guys. Now five. John White decided he wanted to throw himself into the fire. But, you know, I smell something burning, and it might be. Good morning, caller. Come in. A question from...
Oh, yes, Filippo again, brother.
Okay.
The short one. John White is not throwing himself in the fire. He's throwing kerosene on the fire. Anyway, your guess. I fully agree with him. The corridor, the billion-dollar corridor per mile, the billion-dollar mile, is from Honolulu Airport to Waikiki. Mm-hmm. And I fully agree. It looks like a third world thing.
Yeah.
With that money, instead of this rail, they could go into a system, a highway system, from airport to Waikiki that would be the center of the world.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
And I fully agree with it, with him, basically. And the thing about people do not understand when they, a lot of local people, when people who are not from here basically come here to live, okay,
mm-hmm.
and have these remarks, you know?
Yeah.
Please don't think that it is the majority of the people who live here.
Yeah, because there's a... Yeah, well, thank you.
we learn from each other.
Exactly.
Hopefully.
Okay.
You know,
aloha.
Aloha. You know, just to point that out, for instance, my brother-in-law, his family has been here when Hawaii was still a kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the way he looks, he always gets the F and Haole treatment.
Yeah.
But he's actually a citizen of the Hawaiian kingdom. I mean, his ancestors, you know.
Yeah.
I'm
curious, and you know, as foul mouth as I'm saying, I'd like to know, what did Kurt Caldwell do for the people anyway? I know he served in the House of Representatives, and he lost when he thought he'd go big. But Dan didn't tell him to step down and wait his turn.
No.
You know, it's like we need to get out of this mode, and I welcome Ben Cayetano's presence in this.
Oh, I do too. I think he's the only true servant for the people.
And just whatever his philosophical purpose is, or whatever, just the fact that he's given these cats something to think about now. They had an unobstructed view.
Yeah,
of all the mayor's office, Congress, you know, the Senate, oh man, and you know, they were gonna just walk in. And then up popped Ben. And what we should now is call, we have our own Big Ben like they do in London. See, because these dudes are scared, I can tell you. They're shaking in their pants. I walked by Carlisle and Caldwell the other day, and I could have sworn they were building a fish pond. You know, there was water. They were shaking, man, sweating, and bullets, because they know now the chicken's going to come home to roost.
You know, I got a good friend who always says, if I'm factually inaccurate, I will apologize.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I will say it the way it is. And, you know, if you can't have a debate, and if you can't say it straight, and if you can't just call it what it is, mm-hmm. then you're going to have to end up apologizing for... Actually, the senator ask for an apology, or is it just the opponents who are hiding behind his tail?
Yeah, it's that dirty politics, that red politics that they, you know, let's just attack him because we're in trouble. Everything else, just throw the kitchen sink at him, anything, just throw anything. Whatever sticks on the wall, he'll have to deal with it. But the public here is smarter than that.
That's true.
And they don't realize that once we turn on the lights, the cockroaches and the crooked politicians, they're going to run. And that's what they're really worried about. They're worried about that if a new administration come in. And I think Ben, I know some of the background, he'll seek to put you in jail,
you know,
if you're stealing from the people. And I think the people are expecting that.
You actually just mentioned something that's interesting, the people. Because the people are much smarter than the politicians.
Oh, God, yeah.
To start advertising the great wisdom, did a poll, wanted to know how many people thought that Ben should apologize. And my understanding is that 66% of the people, or of the vote, whatever that poll was, mm-hmm. said no. No need to apologize. 34% said, well, he should. But just think about it. Twice as many people, or 66% said no. Do not apologize. Say it the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Tell the truth.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, caller. You have a comment, a question?
Yes, good morning, Carol.
Good morning.
Good show you had. I just want to let you know that there's going to be a meeting at the Hanuahali on the May 8th, second floor conference room.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Citizens for Fair ADA Rights, CFADAR.
Mm-hmm.
And we have quarterly meetings with Wayne Yoshika, DTS, and Roger Morton, OTS, and the handy van issues and whatnot with the bus. And we would like to let your listeners know if they want to join us. It's on May 8th, second floor conference room,
mm-hmm.
from 10 a.m. to 11:45 a.m. And we discuss issues with the handy van mostly, but the bus, you know.
Okay.
And for the consumers that use those.
So May 8th?
May 8th.
Mm-hmm. What time?
10 a.m.
10 a.m.
to 11:45 a.m.
Okay, and on the second floor at the City Hall?
Conference room, yeah.
Conference room, okay.
And, you know, it's open to the public, so you can come in and you can listen, observe, and you know, express your opinions and whatnot.
Okay, yeah. All righty. Hey, thank you.
Yeah, take care.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Caller, go ahead. You have a comment, a question?
Good morning, Carol.
Good morning.
I hear you can't get a hold of Carlisle and nobody's showing face and all that great stuff, right?
Well, they don't call.
Okay, but they got enough time to go to the nightclubs and take pictures with everybody else. I've seen the guy a number of times at nightclubs taking pictures with women. And as a true leader, I was just kind of disappointed in the guy. He can't make the time to talk to a real man, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, I appreciate that. I don't know what their problem is, but, you know. But, you know, I have to remind myself, also the governor don't recognize me as an entity that would be deserving of receiving a press release. So he said that I don't qualify. So, you know, the whole place is rotten with people in there. This is my job, my government, not the public. But
right.
We're going to fix it. I guarantee you if I have to sit here and talk until people just decide, you know, you're just too we can't take you anymore, Mr. Cox. But I'm going to tell it like it is. Straight shooter, I'm not backing down, and I, those of you that are friends with these guys, I'm speaking on behalf of myself, and I think I'm a good canary in the cave to tell you that taxes are taxes, and when you're abusing them and abusing your authority, I don't need a million people to confirm that. My money is my money, you know?
Right. We need good people like you, man. Keep up the good work.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Well, that's the whole issue, taxpayers' money.
Yeah.
I mean, where's this money going to come from? You know, I mean, we keep hearing Washington will pay. Now, you know, actually, wasn't Washington supposed to pay the majority of it? Now it's down to $1.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we going to come up with the rest? More property tax? It's already pretty much impossible to live in this town.
Yeah, but again, you know, when we people third world country, I don't think we have an access to government anymore. We really don't.
Well, we know that because with the current governor, I mean, just think about it, we had a radio show how he passed an emergency law and didn't even tell the legislatures about it.
Right.
Now, how he they passed this Act 55. You know, they can build what they want without any zoning regulations, any building codes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he's driving the canoe and
we're
on the beach.
In the back of my mind, there's this little guy sitting there saying, well, you know, don't get your hopes too high, you know, with caution. Because when I heard that Peter Carlisle was running, man, I was just absolutely excited because, hey, new sheriff in town. But he's been an old sheriff. He knows who the players are. He'll send you to jail and blah, blah. But all that fizzle, and then when he, what really felt like a stake being driven in my heart or my hopes, was that he then goes out and promotes the rail in a fashion that we didn't even know. So he deceived us in a sense. He didn't give us a chance to debate it, to tell us at the voting booth, to give us that opportunity. Deceptive practices. That's why I believe he got to go. And the other reason, if there's somebody else going to run against Ben, fine, bring him on, let him, and fair play is fair play. But with this, we know where Caldwell is. Mufi Hanneman helped him in. And
right.
You know, and so by city manager and all, he haven't shown me his salt.
Well, I haven't seen. Well, actually, I was kind of hopeful too that Peter Carlisle would actually clean up.
Yeah.
Because that would have been his track record. But I haven't seen anything in 2 years.
Nothing. Nothing. And this benefit, so that the public can hear this and the listeners, what I believe that should happen immediately is Peter Carlisle should immediately put together a letter demanding to the grantees, all of them for the last 4 years, 5 years that got money under the Hanneman administration, to make them pay back the money, give them a certain time with a strong letter, and if they don't meet that deadline, give it to the city prosecutor or give it to the corporation council and immediately ask for the money or take legal action. $4 million is $4 million. People that supposedly have gotten the money, you know, I'm told Ernie Martin, for example, who was one of the administrators of the grant, actually wrote the 501c3 application for some of the entities that got the grant.
Hmm.
You see, so these are the things that we should be apologizing for. But no, somebody said something about Dan and Noy, and it hurts his feelings. Come on. you know how many people say bad things about Danny Noy up in Washington? Every Republican, he's used to the stones, and he's not thin-skinned, I know. But John White thought he should. Would you do that? I mean, personally, would you go out and pick the fight against the world on behalf of someone when it's not even...
he's an honorable man. He has fought for us. He has served us. And to think that he wants an apology, I think that's ridiculous. It's like asking someone that flies first class. You haven't set an economy for years. It's just you're used to it.
Yeah.
It's just that simple. You know? I mean, it's like my kid said once when we had an upgrade. He said, "Dad, let's not ever fly not first class again." Well, let's have a reality check, kid. Uh-huh. Who's going to pay for the ticket? Okay? Well, we lucked out on the upgrade because someone with money decided not to fly.
Yeah.
But the reality is different.
Yeah.
The reality is McDonald's.
Yeah. Good morning, caller. Real quick, comment or question.
Morning. Maybe we can have another vote for the rail.
Okay.
Mr. Peter Kyle, put an emergency vote to see what the mystery is. People want the rail or the people don't want the rail.
Okay.
And let's go on to that.
All righty. Thank you,
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Aloha. All right. Anyway, that's, an hour goes fast. And, I just hate debating the rail because I'm predisposed that it's a hook and crook process and it means no good.
We need mass transit. We need to do something, but not just building that one spur.
Yeah.
And we need to look at every facet. We need to do a road study. You know, Christmas time, you can't park on Kapiolani in certain areas.
Right.
Why don't we have these rules and regulations? Why aren't we looking at the entire picture? And the only one I know of that's looking at the entire picture
Ben Cayetano.
Because he talks to the people who do the traffic studies.
Exactly.
Like that professor from UH.
Panos. I mean, he's incorporated Panos and sought information and met with other people. So how did Peter Carlisle miss these people?
I don't know. He had 2 years to do something about it. I mean, does he expect us to walk to the station?
Yeah.
Am I going to drive to the station? Is a bus going to pick me up at my house? How are we going to utilize the rail? And then somebody else was telling us there's only so many seats, so 60% of the people we expect have to be standing up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know how many people will be standing for 2 hours on the rail.
It's amazing.
And it does do nothing for the traffic congestion as it is, and it will not help with future traffic congestion.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we spending money if we're not trying to solve the problem, which is traffic congestion?
Right. Yep. Caller, real quick. You have about 35 seconds. Can I help you? Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Go ahead, real quick.
Good morning. Just one comment about rail is that, we're the sensible ones, but you've got all these people that want jobs for the short term, and these are people that voted for Carlisle and voted for Abercrombie, and, it's brought a network, and, it's who needs the money and who's getting the money.
Yeah.
And if the general population en masse doesn't see this, we're just going to keep whistling Dixie about this whole thing. So.
Yeah, well, that's why I want to flesh out the real issues. So thank you, caller.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, thank you, Mike. I enjoyed it. Any time. I love this. And then I apologize if I've offended anybody in my comments, but they stand. I stand on them, and I'm not going to take them back because when you steal from the masses, not a third world country. You're not a country at all. So anyway, we'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you, Carol.
Aloha.
Aloha. Should we piss some people off or what?